because I haven't even gotten to, he can get switched on to a guard. And I think he's better at that than even Rudy Gobert. Rudy Gobert gets top heavy. He will get switched on to Steph on the other side, and he's going to have to guard him. And Capella is really good at that.
You know, your breakdown here, Pop, it's got me thinking here. This is a bigger series for Kevon Looney. Kevon Looney is so key for the Golden State Warriors on these switches, because we have seen Looney switch on to Chris Paul and defend him very well in that pick and roll here. As you mentioned, David West minutes did go down here. So looking at JaVale McGee, I don't know if he could play in the series. Maybe a starter and try to steal some minutes. I don't know. But Clint Capella is a big-time problem. He's giving me a headache right now. You are listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM, and HD1, KGMZ San Francisco, the radio home for every single Warriors playoff game right here on 95.7 The Game. We'll catch up with former Warrior Clifford Ray in just a second here. He did work with Clint Capella. And, you know, Clint Capella earlier this year, and nobody's going to make a big deal out of it. Maybe some of the media pop. But he did say after the Rockets beat the Warriors twice for the second time this season, he said, we're better than them. We are a lot better than them. Of course, Kevin Durant went off and spews now saying, hey, he's not a factor. He can't say things like that. But let's bring in Clifford Ray. We do have him here on the Afternoon Delight with Pop and Bonte on 95.7 The Game. Of course, he won a world championship with the Golden State Warriors in 1975. Cliff, you worked with Clint Capella before, man. This guy's game has evolved so well. His fourth year in the NBA, now he's averaging over 14 points, 12 rebounds in these playoffs, and he's also blocking shots here. Just kind of discuss what you've seen from Clint Capella this postseason.
Well, you know, Clint's, you know, one of the many students that I've had along the way in my career. And he's just a delightful young man, a lot like the guys on that Warrior team, you know, great students of the game and willing to learn and do all the things that are necessary to win a championship. So he's a problem because he runs the floor. He's very athletic. He really learned the pick and roll game well. And he also learned, I call it the ghost spot, which is when you are working from the opposite side of the hash mark on the, underneath the basket. Whenever your driver's pick a lane and they start to go, you try to make it to that area and then work your way to the bucket for a lot of dunks. And he's really gotten that down very well. And, you know, they have a big team when you look at them. You know, I think Foster's a big cog in their, in their bigs, along with Nene, Bamute, you know, and him, and also the kid, Black, the other kid, the other big kid. So, Charles, you know, Black, yeah. So the Warriors, I think, will be fine. You know, they just got to move the basketball. And like I said, everything that they do, if a team is not keyed in defensively to defend them, they're going to have an issue. And they can't go in there and, you know, they don't usually get into where they don't move the ball. Sometimes they've had some issues with turnovers, the Warriors have. But just what I've seen of them doing this last series, I think they're on their game, and I think they're just improving as they go along. And so we'll see. It should be a good matchup. You know, I think I feel like that, you know, they if they do what they're supposed to do, they should be fine.
Johan, it's great to have you back on the Afternoon Delight, my friend. And you know this young guy well, Capella. The one thing that I've noticed about him is he's an incredibly quick second jumper, where he'll jump and land, and then boom, he's back up on the second jump. Talk about what you see from that ability, and just give me a little history of his background. I know he's a soccer player, grew up in Switzerland. Just tell me about his athletic background, Johan.
Well, his athletic background is the fact that he's a Rodman type rebounder, a guy who can do multiple jumps. You know, and that means if he don't think he can control the rebound, then he tries to tap it and go back up to get it. You know, so that's something that he's always been very good at. He's also very good around the offensive boards, and you know, I think the key thing is his ability to handle the ball in pressure in traffic, and you know, just all the things that he did prior to getting to the pro game. You know, he worked his butt off, you know, down in Texas, and he's always been a really, really good worker on the court. I mean, you know, he does whatever, you know, if you give him the time, he'll take whatever time that you have to give him as a coach. And the coaching staff that they have down there with Brent and, you know, and the head coach and John Lucas, all the whole crew that's down there, they all, you know, they're all teachers. And so he just improved. He just continued to improve.
1975 NBA champion with the Golden State Warriors, Clifford Ray, who also won a championship in 2008 with the Boston Celtics as an assistant coach. Here on the Afternoon Delight, we'll pop in Bontown, 95-70 game. So, Cliff, how do you defend, I guess, who is better suited to defend Clint Capela or switch on these pick and rolls? Is it JaVale McGee? Is it David West? Is it Kevon Looney? Who do you feel most comfortable with defending that pick and roll that involves Clint Capela?
Well, they, you know, when you're looking at the game, a seven-game series, the three of them, they have multiple players that are going to be big, that are going to be playing for the Warriors, as well as, you know, as Houston. So I would think that, you know, Coach Kerr, he's probably going to look at it from a standpoint, okay, do I need to go with length? Because, you know, JaVale has a little bit more length than Clint. And, you know, he also is a decent runner. He's a decent shot blocker, I think. If he learned, you know, if he just continues to think about getting to the rim, you know, like look at the angles. You know that James Harden is going to be penetrating on you constantly. He and Chris Paul are going to keep you on your heels all game long. And so what you have to do, if I'm a center and I'm playing, I can't get so, you know, caught up because Clint's not going to shoot jump shots. You know, maybe one of the other guys, Nene, you know, he's comfortable shooting and he will take shots, but basically that's not going to happen, you know. So it's going to always be a situation where JaVale has to get back to the front of the rim, cover the rim, you know, make that drop step, make it a 1-2 there, 1-2 there. You know, the rhythm of getting to the rim is something I think that if he concentrates on that and always see, you know that those guys are coming. James is coming. He's coming all the way, you know, and he will make plays to Clint because Clint's his favorite target, you know, when he's off of pick and rolls and all of that. And he also sees him all the time. And he's always been comfortable playing with Clint over playing with Dwight. And it's just nice, you know, that they have a good chemistry. And, like, you know, I always like their chemistry together. Now they got, you know, Chris Paul, who also is a formidable player because what he does that most people don't do, he has that underneath game. That's the same. He's the same thing that Livingston had. He gets underneath you and he cuts you up. Now, of course, Chris has the ball a lot more than Livingston. They just give it to him on the corner, on the block, or whatever, and then he takes advantage of his abilities, which is that little turnaround jump shot. Well, you know, when Chris gets inside of you, so I think that the guys have to be aware. Now, you don't have to worry about Tremont. Tremont is, you know, he can play those guys too, because he's a very defensive oriented. He knows how to cut off the floor. He knows how to get in the pass lane. He just has so many more defensive weapons. So coach is going to watch it. I'm sure he'll do a great job of getting the most out of all his bigs against the Rockets.
The one of the only Cliff Ray, part of the NBA champion team of 74-75, came over the Nate Thurman deal from Chicago before that year started, joining us on the Afternoon Lighter with Pop and Bonte, 95-7 the game. And he's been a big man coach in the NBA for a number of years. And you work with this Rockets team. You know their personnel well, going back to when we last saw this team in the Western Finals in 2015, four seasons ago, when Kevin McHale was the head coach. I want to get your intel on James Harden's game, and not so much offensively, because he was great then. He's even better now having Paul. But defensively, he looked just disinterested, would be the word I would use. And he rested a lot on that end of the floor. But now he is engaging, and he gets switched on to bigs a lot, and he has to go down low and bang. And I see him make a steal on Donovan Mitchell, and he's shooting passing lanes. What have you seen from James Harden, who led the NBA in scoring this year and will likely win his first MVP, Cliff, on the defensive side of the ball this year?
Well, well, most people don't realize this, but when James was in Oklahoma City, he was a defensive player. I mean, he was a guy who came off the bench and shut down. He was a shut down guy, and because he hadn't worked his way into becoming a star. Everybody considered him that he was going to be a star, but I'm just saying that he's always known how to play defense. But, when he's bringing you 35, 40 points a night, there's going to be times that if he's going to take a break, it's probably going to be on the defensive end. Well, now this is his basketball team. When I say his basketball team, he is the guy that heads up the Rockets, the guys play toward him, and he knows that. So he's put much more effort into his defensive play this year, which has really helped, because now, if you watch the series before they got to San Antonio series, they were all over the place. He and Chris Paul were stealing the ball, getting in the passing lane. They created a lot of deflections in that series, and they're very capable. Ariza, Tucker, they Bamute, who came from the Clippers with Paul, they have a formidable defensive team. You can't go to sleep on them, and that's why I say when you're playing this level, which is now you're playing for the Western Conference Championship, as much as you're playing against that opponent, you're also playing against yourself. And so you got to understand that, and you have to be prepared to be in that game mentally every step of the way, as well as your preparation. And their preparation is going to be there because they got just as formidable coaching staff as the Rockets. And all those guys have been in the trenches, for championships and all of that. So it's not like anybody, I don't think anybody has an edge. I just think it's who decides to go in and take a game on their opponent's floor and get it done and then close out. So being said that, I just feel like that James is going to do what James do. He's going to go out there and he's going to play. Only he's bringing a little bit more to the table defensively now.
All right, Cliff, this is going to be a fun series. We cannot wait. Game one, Monday night, Rockets-Warriors, Western Conference Finals. Thanks so much for the time, champ.
I'm going to go on the record and say that I'm not going to call him and worry him about a ticket to the game this time. They got too many stars that they got to fill right now.
But you're a star too, Cliff. I'm sure they could work something out for you. We'll talk to you soon, Cliff.
All right, enjoy it. You guys keep doing your work.
Thank you, man.
Yes, sir. The great Cliff Ray, world champion with the Golden State Warriors in 1974-75, also as an assistant coach in 2008. Pop, the Rockets shot more threes than any other team in the NBA this season. So will the Warriors have to beat them at their own game? And how much will the offense rely on Steph Curry? We'll talk to Steph Curry's college coach back at Davidson, Bob McKillop, at 1:30 here on the Afternoon Delight. It's Pop and Bonte, 95.7 a game.
Now back to the Greg Papa Show on 95.7 The Game.
Curry curling off a screen, catches left side, shoots a shot. It's up and good. A three ball for Curry. And just like that, he is welcome back. Curry in the front court, goes behind the back, dribbled it off his foot, saved it from going backcourt. Now takes a dribble, takes a 30-footer. Curry! Finds Curry in the middle of the pack. One dribble, it's about a 26-footer.
That is a great Tim Roy, the voice of the Golden State Warriors here on 95.7 The Game with those calls. And we talk about Steph Curry, Pop, here in the Afternoon Delight on 95.7 The Game. He's been back since game number two against the Pelicans at home, where he came off the bench to score 28 points in 29 minutes. He's 15-34 from the three-point line, and he is shooting better. He looks okay. He looks close to 100% on the offensive end. Defensively is where this series is going to come down to, because he's going to be switched in every single pick and roll. The Rockets want Curry defending Harden. They want him defending Chris Paul here. So we'll talk about Steph Curry and how he's looked since he has returned from that grade 2 MCL sprain in his left knee. Of course, we'll talk to his college coach from Davidson, Bob McKillop, at 1:30 here on the Afternoon Light. So, Pop, in your opinion, how has Steph Curry looked since he's been back after missing 5 weeks, the last 5 weeks of the regular season, of course, and then entering the playoffs in game number two in the second round.
Yeah, I mean, it was 38 days. It was 5.5 weeks. And then you have to tack out another 2 weeks from the last ankle sprain against the Spurs on March the 8th. He had the great MCL on March 23rd. So really 7.5 weeks, the guy played 25 minutes of basketball. So all that being said, he looks remarkable. In his first game out, he looked like Steph predominantly. He had a few too many turnovers, but, you know, even Steph has turnovers. Right. But the second game he played, game three in New Orleans on Friday night, I could tell right away his movement skill off the ball running was not the same. It's funny, you know, great track stars, you know, when they hit the tape, they throw their chest out and they lean forward.
Right.
It's the opposite with Steph. When I see him, that game he was in a forward body lean the whole game as he was running, and he just looked off balance. Just did not look good. He looked sluggish, and he admitted that after the game. He was much better on the Sunday game, more like himself. The one thing to keep in mind, New Orleans, as far as how they handled the Warrior pick and rolls, and I don't know why they did this. They did it the entire series. They did not switch. They locked and trailed. And I think it took Steph a little while to get used to having a defender, you know, not switch and have a big come on to him wherever, the, you know, coming off a screen, whether even though it's off the ball. You know, that original defender, whether it was Rondo or Drew Holiday or mainly Etuan Moore, would stay right behind him and could bother his shot from behind. So I think he had to lean in a little bit more. It was just something he had to get used to. I thought he was fine in game four. The one thing that, and I asked Jim Barnett about it, and Jim and I were talking about it at the arena the night before the closeout game five, he didn't jump off his left foot. He jumped off the right foot. Now, there may have been reason for that, and I think there was. Anthony Davis was up his back both times, and I think he wanted to quick step him and get the shot up fast before the shot blocker could lunge. And by just going off that right foot with the right hand, it's the opposite. You jump off the left foot to finish right and the right foot to finish left. Then he could just get it up on the glass quicker. And there was one time, even the game on Sunday, where he had Davis on his back, and he did. And I think he did that purposely to not allow him to jump. And Drew Holiday will do that a lot. Chris Paul will do that a lot. We'll have a big guy come from behind him, and he will slow right down and feel the big guy, and then explode. Mullen was great at that, and then get it up. So I thought, okay, it's cool. But there were a couple situations on the closeout game on Tuesday in Game 5 where the one time where he had a clear breakaway where they threw ahead to him, and I was thinking, is he going to be able to dunk? Well, he went in and shot the layup left-handed.
Yeah.
Now, he's great. His left hand is damn near as good as his right, and Coach Bob will join us in a few minutes from Davidson. And, you know, he'll go back to his history, but I just thought, that's odd. And I every time he would drive the lane, because what I wanted to see was something he could not do going back 2016, was that time it was the right knee that he hurt. He could not jump off the right. He couldn't explode off the right. So I just wanted to watch him jump off the left. He's not done it that I can tell. Even the time where he had the clear path layup,
right,
and Holiday tracked him. And I think he just, you know, Holiday may have gotten there. And the proper play was to drop it. And it's so impressive that he saw that. He dropped it back to Durant.
It's just the way he did it, right? It looked awkward.
He kind of spun around. It almost looked like he couldn't explode on the jump. I think he was going to try to jump off his right foot there. It's the proper play. But the other one where he had the clear path and he shot it left-handed, why would he do that? So yeah. I thought, the point is, I've yet to see him jump off the left knee, whether he's jumping off the wrong foot or choosing to finish with the left hand and not the right hand. So it's probably no big deal, and I'm overanalyzing it, and he's going to be fine. And the fact they wrap this up Tuesday and they're not going to start till Monday, he'll have time to get his body back. But the other side of it is, there's no doubt they're going to attack him.
Right.
Chris Paul dropped
41 the other night. He scored 13 straight in that fourth quarter. Chris Paul looks hungry, and we know Steph Curry can defend Chris Paul, and Chris Paul will get there and flop around. But he's going to be switch on the Paul. He's going to be switch on the Harden. How concerned are you with this defense? Because defensively is where I'm a little bit concerned about Curry, Pop.
Well, I and Anthony Slater articulated that, and I think he defends fine. It's not been the lateral movement. And when you're looking at an MCL, you are looking at lateral movement. It's the stabilizing ligament around the knee. But I honestly thought his movement's been okay. He's Steph Curry. He's not a great defender. The movement skills that he has so well with the ball, almost every player in the NBA does not have the same skill set without the ball. Some do, very few. In the history of the league, have been able to guard as well as they can score, and vice versa. Usually, they're deficient on one side.
Right.
So he's, but I almost think that they may empower him, and that's why playing game one at third place is a little odd, because typically, now they may just come at him right away, full bore. We're treating it like it's game seven, and we're tied, and there's 2 minutes to go, and here
right.
we come.
Right.
We're locked, putting our best on your best. We're not sparring. We're coming right out, and we're throwing haymakers, and we're going.
And you think they want to send that? They probably want to send that message as well.
Forget the message. You want to win the game. There's no message to be sent. At the end of the game, you want to have more points than them. I love that. Send a message. Screw the message. The message is we're putting our best. We're not sending a message. We're not writing them a letter, an email, or an Instagram. It's just we're going to beat you. So we're coming out, and we respect you. And we're not going to spar and feel you out. There have been some playoff series where they do that. So they may just open it up and not go Hampton's five, and whether it's Kevon or JaVale, and you may empower Steph to try Paul. Let's let it go, and you go get him, and let's see how this works. And then we'll do that. But you've got to keep in mind, whoever you're on, you're not going to end up on. Because they're going to force a switch. Now, with the Warriors and the higher level, teams have been doing this for years on them, where they want Steph to be switched on to bigger, stronger players. Harden is the guy you don't want him on. I think you may just start and say, let's see if he can guard Paul. But then, if you don't want him on Harden or a certain matchup, the Warriors will pre-switch the switch. And they will just Draymond will orchestrate it all, and you slide up and you slide back. I mean, ideally, you want Steph to be on the guys in the short corners, whether it's Ariza or Tucker. Now, they're going to let, go down and walk those guys down and post up Steph. Go ahead. Let at it. Go ahead. Take your inefficient mid-range and go score, whatever. But you're not worried about it. You're worried about Harden and Paul and pitching to the shooters. So, if they'll take the cheese and go ahead and do that, I don't know. But they may just let Steph go ahead and guard Paul, because he has proven – there are a lot of guard matchups he has a hard time with. That's where I think the Warriors turned a page, Vontae, where Steph could guard Paul.
Right.
You didn't have to do that anymore, and he could guard him. And then on the other end, Paul could not guard him. It allowed Clay to lock and trail on J.J. Redick. Now, ultimately, though, your best matchup is Andre on Paul. It's Clay on Harden. It's Draymond on Capella, and you can deal with all the switches. But they may just ease into it and not drop the hammer right away and spar with them before you start throwing haymakers.
No, I'm with you here. Real quick before we get Coach Bob McCullough on the three-point shooting, are you concerned about the Warriors having shot well this postseason from the three-point line? Obviously, they haven't had Steph Curry, but I'm looking at Kevin Durant. He was shooting 27% for a while here in these playoffs from the three-point line. Are you worried about the Warriors not hitting their threes like they usually do against a team that's going to hoist up 40 to 50 three-pointers a night?
The Houston Rockets this year shot more threes than twos. It is amazing. They were over 50%. They shot 42 threes a game. They shot 39.9 threes a game in the playoffs. They're going to run 70 pick and rolls at you, and they're going to shoot 40 threes. They've got three shooters everywhere. They're all arced out. We all know. They don't have Steph, who made 402 in a single year. They don't have Clay, who's arguably going to end his career with more threes than even Steph. They'll probably end up 1-2. They've got a lot of guys that shoot them well. I don't think it's going to come down to three-point shooting. They may make more threes. They're not going to make as many twos as the Warriors. And if they're going to just say, we are not taking mid-range shots, we're shooting threes and frees, we saw what Pop did to them. They will go out on the arc, and they will guard them. I think Houston's going to have to adjust, and I think they have. By bringing Paul here, Paul has made more threes this year. He's a good three-point shooter. He's gotten better. But he'll beat you inside and circle out and take that fadeaway on you. So I'm not worried about threeing with them. It's going to be guarding their threes. And you can't come off the short corner to collapse on help. So you got to deal with Harden, Paul, and Capella in the incessant pick and rolls and still be able to stay home on shooters in the short corner and above the break.
Let's bring in Curry's college head coach from Davidson, Bob McKillop. He joins the Afternoon Light with Pop and Bonte on 95.7 The Game. Coach, welcome back to the program here. Good to talk to you. so far, what have you seen from Stephen Curry since he's returned from his MCL grade 2 injury to his left knee?
Well, Bonte, wonderful to be with you and Greg. Thank you for having me back. Always great to be on with you guys this time of year. And, you know, I talked to Steph, I guess it was a week ago, Tuesday, after the first game, and slowly immersing himself back in the rhythm and the flow of both the team and his own rhythm, he's really stepped up to what his routine is. I find it fascinating, the energy that seems to just permeate the court when he's on the court. There's just a new energy. And what is also interesting, the amount of driving space that opens up, because not only is he a threat from such a distance, but he'll make what I call a quick window pass. The window's only open a short period of time, and he gets that pass through that leads to another pass that leads to a basket. We call those things Gretzky's. You know, you make the assist that leads to the assist.
Right,
yeah.
Stephen gets a lot of assists, don't get me wrong, but he throws a lot of Gretzky's. And it's that kind of spacing that I think just the Warriors are just capitalizing on it as they did against New Orleans.
Yeah, listening to you talk, and you know his game so much better than us, at least from his formative years. We just see him at the NBA level. Has he always had this left hand? I mean, it's hard to differentiate what he's best at, shooting or passing or dribbling, because he's great at all of them. But the ability to pass with his left hand, has he always had that, Coach?
Yeah, his eye-hand skill is incredible. And that's why he's such a good golfer. That's why he was such a terrific baseball player. I mean, he has just great wrists and great fingertips. And the thrust that comes out of his motion propels the ball at a speed that gets through the window. And then, of course, his touch around the rim. My goodness gracious, he throws it up there like a feather. I remember a long time ago, there was a great player for the New York Knicks named Bernard King, and Bernard had this tremendous capacity to throw a ball up towards the basket, and it was like a feather floating up there. Steph does the same thing when he drives. It's feathery.
You were talking about Steph's ability to space the floor. Did you watch the game on Tuesday night, Coach?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, when they came down 2-on-1, and it's Steph on one side and Clay on the other, and both guys go to the 3-point line, and he takes a three, and then the coach and you, I mean, it's a part of you, just go take a layup. It's amazing how the game's evolved, and it's your guy that did it, Coach.
Well, can you believe how many timeouts that were called in such a quick period of time? It was as if New Orleans was hit with a dagger through their heart, possession after possession, and it was those threes, the transition threes, the kick-out threes after a rebound. And don't undersell the defense that Golden State plays. My goodness, they are so quick to the ball. They'd be great defensive backs for the 49ers if any of those guys wanted to play football. Boy, they've got tremendous break on the ball.
Curry's college coach, Bob McKillop at Davidson, here on the Afternoon Delight with Papa Bonte on 95.7 The Game. So defensively, as we've been talking about, Coach, Steph is going to be switched on to Harden and Chris Paul. That's what the Rockets want here. Just talk about how Curry has evolved defensively, because there's this myth out there that he can just be cooked on that end. But he's gotten a lot better there, and I thought at times against the Rockets this season, he defended Harden and Paul very well in crunch time. I know he got a steal on Chris Paul late in that game. Harden hit a tough step back three on him late in that game as well, where the Rockets got that victory here. But just talk about Steph's just talk about him on the defensive end, Coach, and how he's evolved on that end.
Aggressive hands. I'm not sure what the statistics show, but I would suspect that he has a significant number of deflections throughout the game and throughout the season. So I think he's got quick hands. But the second thing he does marvelously well is he stops on a dime. So he can change speed and direction very, very well. He does a terrific job of keeping his butt sits down and his nose is somewhere between the middle of his body, so he's got great balance. So the balance and the foot speed, the ability to stop, and the terrific hands, I think he's custom built to be a very good defender, and I think he's really evolved into that. He was a great defender for us at the college level, and I think he struggled his first couple years in the NBA. But boy, he can play angles and with his vision, seeing where the ball is going to be, not just where it is, makes him not just a great offensive player, but I think a very efficient defensive player as well.
And some of the skills that he has on offense with his lightning quick hands to dribble, that obviously translates into defense, Coach. I think he's at his best when he's off the ball and he's roaming and he's digging and he's just flying around using his hands.
I fully agree with that. You know, he's like a defensive back that can roam the any receiver out there and pick off an interception. But he's got a great break on the ball. And with the quickness of his hands and his ability to immediately turn it into something offensively, again, that's deflating. And I think that's a big part of what Golden State does. They really deflate teams emotionally.
So how do you see this series? Obviously, Steph and Clay and the Splash Brothers, but they got Harden and Paul. You know, maybe the Warrior front line is better than their front line, but they're playing at a very high level. How do you see this Western showdown we've been waiting for all year, your guy Steph Curry against the Houston Rockets, Coach?
Well, I love Golden State's defense, and I think if Golden State can get the stops that they're capable of getting, I think that puts a greater threat on the defense of Houston. Houston does not defend very well when they don't score very well. So Golden State's got to create defensive chaos, not give them the kind of looks that they've had in the first two series. And as a result, if they're not efficient offensively, I think they become very, very suspect defensively. I believe the Jazz exposed that maybe in the second game or third game. They really beat them down the court. Their defensive transition struggled. And I think if Golden State is able to stop them from scoring, I think it really will play into the offensive end and really take advantage of the chance to cut into the defense of Houston, which is, I think, one of their weaknesses.
Coach, I know you're obviously you have a love affair with Curry's your guy. Obviously, you coached him at Davidson. But I do want to get a prediction out of you here. Western Conference Finals, how many games do you see this going? And will the Warriors ultimately beat the Houston Rockets?
Well, I don't like the fact that they got the first two in Houston. So we're going to split them down there. Then we're going to get two in San Francisco. Then he may get the fifth. Then we'll get the sixth. All right. That's what I'm projecting.
Six-game series. Now, do the Warriors win game one or game two? Because I believe if the Warriors win game one, we may see a situation like the Eastern Conference semifinals between the Cavaliers and Toronto Raptors.
I haven't looked that deep into my crystal ball yet.
Just have the Warriors win. We don't care if it takes nine games, Coach. Are you going to come out to the West Coast and see any games either in this round or the finals, Coach?
I actually texted Steph last night for tickets for game four and game six. So, and I said, only if you let those guys hang on to game six.
There will be a game four. We're not sure about six. That'll be Memorial Day weekend. So that'll be great. Coach, thank you so much for your time. Always great catching up.
I always delight to be with you guys. And boy, you got a lot of fans here in Davidson, North Carolina. Let me tell you that.
Oh, that is awesome.
I wonder why.
Thanks so much, Coach. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Great to be with you.
Bob McKillop, Coach at Davidson. Obviously, Coach Curry at Davidson. He knows Curry better than anybody here in the Bay Area. Pop, we got to talk about the GMs here. Obviously, Daryl Morey and Bob Myers, who we'll talk to at 2 o'clock here on the Afternoon Light. Let's discuss the two men that constructed these two teams and how different they are. We'll talk about it right here on 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to the Greg Papa Show on 95.7 The Game.
It's a weapons race in the NBA, and you're either in the weapons race or on the sidelines. And with James Harden in his prime and Chris Paul in his prime, this gives us a real shot to chase, you know, the juggernaut teams that are out there.
That is Daryl Morey when the Houston Rockets introduced Chris Paul after they traded for him with the Clippers. I believe the Rockets traded like seven players away for Chris Paul and Luke Mbah-Mute. And we bring that up because Daryl Morey is the GM of the Houston Rockets, and he is obsessed with the Golden State Warriors. We'll discuss how different he is than Bob Myers, who will join the Afternoon Delight at 2 o'clock here on 95.70 Game. So, Pop, I know you're disgust for Daryl Morey. He's the analytics guy. He's money ball in basketball. He believes in a three-point shot. Doesn't believe in the mid-range jumper here. Just talk about how different, in your opinion, in your eyes, how different he is than Bob Myers here in Golden State.
Well, I mean, and you know, Bob joins us every week, and I think the audience can hear the humility in his voice, the tenderness in his heart, the caring. He's just a tremendous person. He's one of the best people in his position in all of sport. He is a competitor. He played the game at Mount Vista, UCLA, won a championship, was an agent. So he's but I think it's just, you know, his warmth and embracing of people fits the Warriors and fits the head coach. It fits Steph Curry. And, you know, Joe and Peter made a lot of great hires, Rick Welts being one, and just, you know, the hiring of Steve Kerr was instrumental. But I think just the combination of Bob and Steve just and with Steph, you know, it allows Durant to come in. And it's just as people, I guess the best way to say it is Bob is a we guy and Daryl is more of a me guy.
Right.
So, you know, does that trickle down to the locker room? Does it matter? I don't know. I mean, you know, Bob's obviously on the mountaintop. I mean, his team has been two, you know, they was one shot away from winning three straight titles, four straight Western finals. You know, everybody's trying to go for them. Now, the reason we talk so much about Daryl Morey is Daryl Morey talks so much about the Warriors. And I think with reason, the Warriors were on path to be one of the most special teams in the history of the NBA, and maybe the best thing or the worst thing that ever happened to the NBA is when Harrison Barnes did not accept that offer going into the final year of his contract. You know, what if he would have accepted the terms and re-signed? Then you wouldn't have had the financial latitude to go get Kevin Durant.
Right.
So now you get Kevin Durant, and you're in a whole different stratosphere. So I fully understand what Daryl Morey is obsessing about. If he's going to, you know, fulfill his goal is to get this Rocket franchise a championship, then they've got to keep up with the arms race, as he called it, with the Warriors. And the very day that the Warriors won the championship last June, Daryl Morey sets out the cryptic tweet that we got something up our sleeves, you know, right. Something's coming. So they obviously tampered with Paul.
No doubt about it.
They reached out to him. And I, you know, did anybody ever bring that up? And I looked at it more from the Clippers side, the Jerry West, Doc Rivers, Lawrence Frank, Steve Ballmer side. Like, you know, what are you talking to our player for? But, you know, the reality is they made a trade and they were to lose Paul, you know, possibly anyway. Had he opted out, he wound up opting in. It's a sign and trade. But for the rest of the league, I guess you're powerless to deal with it, but when Paul comes in and says, I want to be a Rocket, well, how do you know the Rockets want you? Well, obviously, they've been talking for 2 weeks. We're not fools. So, but it has changed the dynamics. Now, you could break down Morey's background, you know, more of a numbers cruncher, a stat guy, kind of a Bill James kind of guy. And there is a role for those people in NBA, NFL, Major League Baseball, NHL. There's a role for advanced analytics. The Warriors have Sammy Gelfand. He's one of the best. Now, you know, do you let him aspire up and run the whole thing? Well, possibly. And he's obviously got people skills. Harden likes some of the guys. Like, I got Paul there. So it's just, you know, how they built their team. And he's been on this watch for a long, long time. He did not inherit James Harden. He made the trade to get
right.
James Harden.
Been a Rockets GM since 2007, and he's flipped this roster upside down. He brought in James Harden as a centerpiece, and he traded him when he found a deal. OKC was having a hard time trying to re-sign James Harden, and Daryl Morey stepped in and got his franchise player here. And give him credit. He's built the team exactly how he wants it. He's got a bunch of three-point shooters now. He's gotten P.J. Tucker some defense. He finally invested in defense, Pop. I think that's the difference with Morey this year. He said, you know what? My system of just three and trying to outscore everybody, it's not going to work. I'm not going to have a chance to beat the Golden State Warriors if I don't get tougher on this team. So he brought in toughness. He brings in Lukumba Mute. He brings in P.J. Tucker. You still have Ariza there who can play defense at times here. So give Morey credit. He's adjusted his game a little bit, and he's obsessed. I remember being in the locker room when the Rockets beat the Warriors in double overtime two seasons ago, Pop. He was fist pumping. It was almost like they won the NBA championship. He was that ecstatic about beating the Golden State Warriors here. So this would be interesting to see what he does during this series here. But Morey, give him credit. He's adjusted his game a little bit here. But ultimately, can this strategy work in the NBA? Can it bring home a championship to the Houston Rockets?
What, shooting threes?
Shooting threes.
That's not the issue they have. They shot more threes than twos. As long as they're quality shots, that's fine. The fact that they just eschew the mid-range. But I think they've backpedaled on that as well. You know, there was a huge article on Mike D'Antoni and the Houston Rockets recently in SI. Saintly said it to me. Normally I wouldn't read this kind of thing, but it was more expansive in the mind of Mike D'Antoni. And they put a red X next to any shot that they view to be inefficient. Now, some of Chris Paul's shots inefficient. I mean, that's what won him the game the other night. Yeah, he made a barrage of threes, including the one he coiled up behind his head like Silk Wilkes and banked in. But his ability is not just to shoot the long one, but to break you down and probe your defense. And if it's a pull-up or a fade in the lane or outside of the lane, a mid-range shot. I mean, would you not want Kevin Durant on your team? That's what he's great at. So, yes, shooting a high percentage of threes is not a bad thing. Now, are they easier to guard? And there's landmarks. You know, baseball players have spray charts, and you see the exaggerated shifts today in the NFL. You can tell what hash mark an offense is, what formation they are, where the preponderance throws and runs are going to be. So you can set up your landmines on their landmarks to blow it up. So if they're not going to, you know, probe inside, but I think they've done more of that. I think the intriguing thing, and when Bob Myers will join us in a couple of minutes, I think they do have, Bob has not talked a lot about Daryl. They're very different people.
Right.
Bob is a wee guy, and Daryl is a me guy. But here they are. I just wonder what interaction they've had.
I guess the better question here, Pop, is can this trend, do you see this trend becoming, catching on with every NBA team? Because they don't pass the ball much. When you look at total passes, I believe the Rockets are towards the bottom of the league here. And you look at the Warriors and the Sixers and the way the Boston Celtics pass the ball. Can this isolation pick and roll? We've seen it at times with teams where they have won championships, I guess, four down with the Spurs, where you throw it in the dunk and you got the shooters around them. But do you see this trend lasting in the NBA, Daryl Morey's philosophy with the way they play?
You're asking two different things. Yes, three-point shot is not going away. And they shot 42 threes a game. You know, the Warriors had the record briefly at 1,077 three-point attempts. They've obliterated the last couple of years. I see that growing every year. I do not see that going away. What you're asking is, in the bottom line story of this series, and I forgot to Anthony Slater about D'Antoni and Kerr, why Mike D'Antoni has completely flipped philosophy in what he's done. And that's why this SI, and I encourage you to go to SI.com and fire it up. It's more about D'Antoni's mindset. And, you know, he's a far better coach than Kevin McHale. McHale's a good broadcaster. He didn't know what the hell he was doing. But, yes, the three-point shot is going to grow more. You're going to have – to me, you're not going to be able to play in the NBA if you can't make that shot. That's where it's going to be. That's why you're seeing bigs, you know, step way out. And do you want Marc Gasol taking all these threes into Marcus Cousins? Right. But the interesting question is, and I think ultimately where the Warriors win this series is, can the Houston Rockets system win in a playoff series against the quality defenders the Warriors are when you know where they're going to be? And Mike D'Antoni, and again, he gets too much credit for bringing small ball in. Don Nelson did that years before he ever did. And the three ball was in, you know, way before he started shooting it. Right. But he would push the tempo. It was 7 seconds or less. And you see Alvin Gentry's team still doing that. Well, now he wants 7 seconds or less on the shot clock.
Right.
He doesn't want the shot going up in 7 seconds or less, which means shoot at 17 on the 24. He has actually broken it down where they're more efficient when the shot clock's 0 to 6 and 7 to 12. So why has he changed his philosophy there, and he's not looking to shoot fast and play fast? They're playing slow. And then the other side of it is just as far as the ball movement go, did you read this SI article? It's fascinating.
No, I need
he doesn't like
me.
He doesn't like the ball movement off the ball. So remember when Bill Walton was doing the Warrior game and he kept saying, you don't need a screen on the ball.
Right.
The screening is off the ball.
Right.
And that's what John Wooden and Bob will speak to that. The Rockets, they are all ball screen, dribble handoff. That's the where they put the defense at a crisis point. And he does not like ball movement off the ball because his theory is if you do that, you move closer to the basket. And ultimately, you take one of those dreaded twos that we don't want. So, yeah, you can make an action and cut, catch it, and go in and score off of that. So it's just a fascinating dichotomy. These two teams are completely different
right.
from their personalities of the GMs, although they both have, you know, somewhat, I don't want to say similar backgrounds, but Bob was an agent. He wasn't a coach. You know, Maury was a numbers cruncher. So they look at it, you know, just kind of unusually to pair where guys come, like Danny Ainge played. So that's, you know, similar. But the way they built the team as far as the volume of passes, and it's interesting just how much Mike D'Antoni has changed.